Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Jonathan Ellis is a columnist and reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. He is one of our Dakota political junkies. He joins us today via phone. Jonathan, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hey, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the vice presidential debate from last night. Were there things that you noticed that were particularly relevant to South Dakota at all in these debates, or are they things that are sort of leaving us in the shadows?
Oh, that was a great debate last night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was just truly so exciting. There was the Mount Rushmore reference, right,
which
Senator Kaine was accusing Donald Trump of having a Mount Rushmore of, I think, dictators or despots that he liked when he was trying to link him to Vladimir Putin. And I think he threw in the North Korean dictator and some others. Anyway, so that was really, at least last night, the only reference to South Dakota that I can recall. But in seriousness, I think I think one of the most important policy issues, and I don't want to get into some of the other ideological issues, but one of the most interesting policy issues that has come out of this campaign, this election for South Dakota's, probably deals with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the free trade deal that the Obama administration negotiated and had bipartisan support in Congress. One of the rare times you've seen that during the Obama administration. But you've seen certainly, Hillary Clinton, who initially apparently supported it, now opposes it, and of course Donald Trump opposes many of the free trade deals that have been negotiated by this country over the last couple of decades. So, for South Dakota and for our agriculture industry, heavily reliant on these types of trade deals. For me, that's the most significant policy issue that has come out of this election cycle so far. You have both major party candidates who are very skeptical about free trade deals that the agriculture industry certainly support.
How about immigration as a topic? Is that something that's particularly relevant to agriculture as well?
It's extremely relevant to agriculture. I mean, there are many businesses that rely upon immigrants for labor, and frankly, we've seen for capital investments and things like that within the agriculture. So, yeah, immigration is an issue that is important. And you'll find that a lot of Republicans here who, you find Republicans who are opposed to or want major restrictions on immigration. But a lot of Republicans in this state strike a softer tone on immigration than perhaps other places you'll find.
So a vice presidential debate is traditionally fairly boring or buttoned up. This one seemed feisty, almost to the point of obnoxiousness. What was your take on the style of this debate and those as two candidates really going after each other, interrupting, etc.?
Yeah, I mean they were sent out to be bruisers for their respective candidate for the nominees. I thought I was really frankly surprised at how aggressive Tim Kaine was, and because he's kind of he doesn't have that reputation as being and so he was, and that's what he was supposed to be doing. Mike Pence frequently just kind of let those things slide, didn't respond to a lot of the criticisms about Donald Trump, and that's what Kaine was out there trying to beat up on Trump. And at the end of the day, certainly I think, in looking at my Twitter feed this morning, and I follow various media outlets or outlets that are Democratic people, Republican people, I think both sides were pretty happy with the vice presidential nominees, and I was kind of looking for, and we didn't get a lot of policy, as much policy stuff as
right.
You would hope, because it was a lot about insults and defending and that kind of thing. I would have liked to have seen some more more policy things, and the reason why is this: we are about to elect somebody to be president of the United States who is going to be very old. Okay, in the sense of historically who has been elected. I think Donald Trump would probably be the oldest If he were to win, I think Hillary Clinton would be near, maybe just below where Ronald Reagan was. So, from my perspective, it was important to watch how they performed in the event that, you know, one of the person who's president is incapacitated, or God forbid, dies in office. I mean, it happens. And again, this is it hasn't happened in a long time, but it has happened in our nation's history. And I wanted to see two candidates who would be prepared to assume the presidency in that event. And I think both of them looked presidential to me, and would be capable of assuming the office. And so to me, this is maybe a more important vice presidential debate than maybe we've had in the past, because it's just simply because the candidates, so their running mates are so old.
Do you think South Dakota Republicans were reassured by Governor Pence's sort of steady performance?
My guess is South Dakota Republicans, because from what I've read, analysis from other, were probably overjoyed. I think Mike Pence is a guy who would have done well among South Dakota Republicans in general. I mean, he fits. You know, he's a Midwestern governor. He had a strong record as a fiscal conservative in Congress. So. He's the kind of guy who I think would a lot of South Dakota Republicans would gravitate towards.
Is there a better way to run a debate like that? When you're watching the way Elaine Keano sort of led the discussion, was there a better way to sort of structure these things to get at some of those policy questions that we really want to hear? Because many people are just disgusted and turned it off with all the interrupting and stuff. But there were some real nuggets of good information sort of woven in there. Is there a better way?
Well,
do you have thoughts on that?
I thought that she, I mean, just again in reading the analysis, that she has gotten criticized for kind of letting them go as long as they did in terms of interrupting each other. And I sort of jokingly tweeted last night that maybe we need to start caning people who are, who interrupt. Maybe we just have to have a button where you can shut off their mic. I'm serious. I mean, just say
right,
you're not answering
the
question.
Oscars, there's a symphony there that will just play them off if they just cue the music.
Right. And so there were multiple times during that debate where, you know, she asked a question and bam, there was not even, both candidates did that, not even an attempt to answer the question. I was watching with my 12-year-old daughter and my wife, and I was very, very happy to see her comment a few times, well, they're not answering the question. So, I think if you could shut off their mics and just say, listen, I want you to answer the question. But, you know, the candidates agree to rules ahead of time, and probably they would not agree to a rule in which the moderator got to just cut off their mic.
We've talked about partisanship. Let's talk about nonpartisanship and bring it back to South Dakota and talk about Amendment V, which is the amendment to have nonpartisan elections. Let's talk about what the impact and sort of consequences of that can be, you know, pushing it forward a little bit. Can you go there?
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying if V were to pass, what would be some of the impacts? Yeah, I mean, potentially, I think supporters of V, and again, this would remove partisan labels from virtually all contests within political contests within South Dakota, and create an open primary. So you would have Republicans and Democrats competing against each other in an open primary. And the two top vote getters in most offices, not in the House, and the House races would be the top four vote getters, would then face each other, I think, in a general election. So you wouldn't, you would not have the party label on the ballot when you went in. You know, I think supporters of this hope that it yields maybe some more moderate candidates in the general election, whereas the primaries have a way of, when you have a small group of Democrats, a small group of Republicans voting, they tend to be the more ideologically driven voters, and they tend to then nominate people who are not as moderate. Okay, so I think that that's one of the goals of the supporters of V. Certainly, that's the goal of the supporters of V. The concern among those who are against it, however, is that this is an attempt by Democrats who've been unable to sell themselves to voters, are a way to sort of infiltrate and get into office. And it, you know, the opponents fear that this is an anti-transparency measure. Voters have a right to have information about the candidates when they go into a voting booth, and certainly party affiliation is a very fundamental, at least it has been fundamental source piece of information in voting and in politics for much of the country.
So we're also seeing the people who are supporting various ballot measures are starting to get concerned that with the quantity of measures on the ballot, that people will just come in and either ignore them altogether or just vote no on everything and no vote for no change. What are you hearing about that sort of campaign? Is that taking roots at all?
Well, I think there are people who are out there saying just vote for all. I mean, that's basically just saying let's drop napalm on the entire village and wipe it out and then come back at another, you know. There's definitely some of that out there, and because there are some very complicated measures on the and very long, if you want to sit through and read all of the measures, I think there are some people who, even though, for example, the legislature, the legislature overwhelmingly passed this to send to the voters that would redo the governance of tech schools, and you know that had broad support among, you know, everybody, really, a lot of Republicans. But even now, it's like, you know, if we have to lose that in order to, like, defeat other ones and just the vote no message, I mean, it's an easy message, you know, to sell the voters when there's many ballot issues and some that are, you know, admittedly very complicated.
Easy or a little bit lazy?
Well, you know, you got to deal with the political climate that you're in, and you know this came up. I was on a panel discussion at Rotary in downtown Sioux Falls on Monday, and one of the final questions was, I mean, is this, you know, is the electorate you know, up for this many ballot issues and is sure. ones that are as complicated in. And should people just vote no? And I, you know, personally, I think that, you know, there's a good element of voters in South Dakota who do, you know, that educate themselves on these ballot issues and vote accordingly. And I think it is unfortunate when people just simply vote on something that they don't know about. I mean, if you don't know about it, then leave it blank, right? I mean, if you didn't educate yourself, I mean, don't vote. Don't vote no if you don't. I mean, so, but it's an easy campaign. I mean, it is. It's an easy campaign for you know, if you're trying to win at the end of the day. So I'm not surprised that you have some people saying let's just do away with them all.
Sure. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Jonathan Ellis. He's a columnist and reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And before I let you go, Jonathan, I want to talk about this article you had in the Argus Leader. People can find it at argusleader.com. And it's about state law and doctors and fraud accusations. Give us an overview of what you were looking to there.
Well, I've been reporting now for years, actually, on a doctor, a former spine surgeon in Yankton, who was accused of performing many, many unnecessary surgeries on people in order to profit. And some of his patients died as a result of surgeries. Many were maimed and in pain. So obviously this generated a lot of lawsuits. And South Dakota has a medical peer review statute, which basically means that doctors and health providers can critique each other and all of the materials that are used within that peer review process are not discoverable by, you know, litigants who file lawsuits against them. They can't be used in court against them. And the thought is that medical peer review helps the quality of healthcare by letting, you know, doctors freely kind of criticize each other without fear of these materials being used in court. And the question here, though, is a circuit court judge has found that there should be perhaps an exception to that when there's evidence that potentially fraud or a crime existed with regard to, you know, physicians being credentialed. And the question here is there's been some evidence raised showing that the hospitals hired this particular surgeon because of the amount of profit he would generate for him, for the hospitals. And that's a question, what did they defraud patients? And so now this has gone to the Supreme Court. This question has gone to the Supreme Court, and it was there yesterday, whether or not there should be this crime fraud exception to this otherwise very broad privilege that doctors and health and hospitals have. And so that's what the Supreme Court will weigh.
It's a pretty remarkable conversation. It's a great article. I encourage people, again, to go online, argusleader.com, look up Jonathan Ellis's work on this. There's a lot more that we didn't get to talk about, but we're out of time. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Laurie.